Relax and indulge at Nemacolin's Woodland Spa and Holistic Healing Center, where you'll find relaxing massages and treatments, cutting-edge therapies, and traditional holistic practices to uncover life balance and overall wellness. Nemacolin's Holistic Healing Center offers guests innovative, personalized, and unique offerings, including yoga retreats, special services like infrared light therapy, cryotherapy, and more that you won't find anywhere else. To plan your wellness escape, visit nemacolin.com for more details.
This is a podcast by The Straits Times and Money FM 89.3.
Welcome to Power Play, a series which is part of The Straits Times Asian Insider podcast channel. I'm Carissa Yong, ST's US correspondent based in Washington.
And I'm Danson Cheong, ST's China correspondent based in Beijing. Every month, the both of us will look at various facets of the US-China rivalry and its implications for Asia.
In this episode, we're going to look at America's and China's ongoing courtship of Southeast Asia and ASEAN. So, Danson, last week was a pretty exciting week for Southeast Asia watchers in Washington. President Biden hosted ASEAN leaders to a special summit, and most of them descended on Washington. So 8 out of 10 ASEAN leaders were here, except for the Myanmar junta leader and the Philippines, which had just had an election. So it's actually really rare to see so many Southeast Asians gather in one place in DC, honestly. And this is actually the first time that ASEAN leaders have met a US president at the White House. And it's also the first time a US-ASEAN special summit has been held since 2016, when President Obama hosted ASEAN leaders for a two-day summit in Sunnylands, California.
Yes, and I think it's about time. You know, this summit was supposed to have happened in March, and that was postponed because of scheduling conflicts. But Carissa, you know, this summit has been in the making for even longer than that, right?
Yeah, this actually goes back to March 2020, when President Trump was supposed to host ASEAN leaders in Las Vegas. But that got axed because of the pandemic, and I actually still have the credits from my cancelled flight from that trip. And like you said, the Biden administration announced another summit for March this year, but that fell through too because of scheduling conflicts.
So I guess, you know, really a case of third time lucky. But let's zoom out for a bit. You know, why is this such a big deal?
Yeah, let's look at the overall landscape of US-ASEAN-China dynamics. So the US and China are competing for influence in Southeast Asia, but the US has somewhat fallen behind recently. So historically, it's played a big role ensuring security in the region, but China has been deepening its economic ties with the region over the past decade or so, and, you know, a little before that. And meanwhile, America's attention has slipped somewhat because it's been preoccupied with domestic concerns and also other foreign policy quagmires like the wars in Afghanistan and in Iraq. So with this summit, the US wants to send a message that it can be a reliable partner to Southeast Asia and to ASEAN. So, you know, Danson, in the lead up to the summit, US officials have been stressing to the media that they have learned from these past approaches to the region. And, you know, they've been telling us that Washington wants to go beyond military and security cooperation. So instead, they want to meet ASEAN's needs, and they also don't want to force ASEAN to choose between the US and China, which is a big concern of ASEAN. But Danson, I'm curious, what was China's messaging around the US-ASEAN summit? You know, where does China stand in its courtship of ASEAN?
Well, I think the view here in Beijing is that, you know, this is more of the Biden administration trying to you know, strengthen partnerships to confront China. And you know, you sort of see that reflected in what Beijing has said leading up to the summit. For example, you know, you have Foreign Minister Wang Yi, you know, in meetings with his Cambodian and Indonesian counterparts, you know, talking about how the US has been trying to inject this kind of confrontation into the region, you know, through partnerships like the Five Eyes, Quad, and AUKUS. And, you know, it's been like this for many months now. We've seen Beijing call out the US for what it calls block confrontation, you know, saying that the Washington's Indo-Pacific strategy is, you know, the Asian version of NATO. And more recently, we've seen China say, you know, again, that about how, you know, Asia is for Asians, you know, that Asian countries should make their own decisions on security and cooperation, you know, and the implicit message here, you know, is for the US to butt out the region. But, you know, another interesting point that I noticed coming out of this meeting is that, you know, I think Beijing is also quite conscious not to alienate ASEAN nations with its, you know, this fiery rhetoric. ASEAN is strategically very important to China. You know, it's on China's doorstep and key trade routes pass through ASEAN nations in their waters. And so, you know, ASEAN countries have said time and time again that they don't want to have to choose between one power or the other. And so after the summit, you know, you had the Chinese Foreign Ministry saying that both the China and the US are countries in Asia, in Asia Pacific, and there was no reason why they both cannot share the same friends, you know, as long as they both play a constructive role in the region. But that's enough for me. You know, so Krista, what would you say were the key outcomes from the summit?
I'd say there were three main concrete things. You know, the first thing was US $150 million worth of programs. So these were in the areas of clean energy, maritime cooperation, public health, education, and also there are a few schemes here and there in the areas of infrastructure and digital economy, and honestly, a bunch of other areas as well. And the second thing other than the programs was that President Biden finally announced that he was nominating a close advisor, Mr. Johannes Abraham, to fill the post of US ambassador to ASEAN. And the third thing is that the US and ASEAN agreed to work towards upgrading their ties to a comprehensive strategic partnership in November. So currently they are strategic partners. But Denson, arguably all three of those outcomes can actually be seen as the US playing catch up to China. So for the $150 million, that honestly isn't that much compared to the billions that China has been pouring into the region. And, you know, to be fair, the US does work differently. You know, instead of the government pushing organizations and companies to go into another country, they try and encourage the private sector to invest in these countries. But still, the disparity is pretty big in terms of just sheer numbers. And also, filling the post of US ambassador to ASEAN is kind of long overdue, because that position has been vacant since January 2017, when the Trump administration started, and that's been more than 5 years. And Mr. Biden is more than a year into his term, so it's really been a while. And thirdly, you know, ASEAN already has a comprehensive strategic partnership with China, as well as with Australia. So the US gaining this status would kind of put it on par with China.
Yeah, you're right. You know, the US really has quite a bit to catch up to here in ASEAN. Those numbers that you just outlined, they might seem like a lot, but I would, you know, I just like to provide some context. Last year, when ASEAN and China commemorated 30 years of dialogue relations, President Xi Jinping, you know, announced that Beijing would provide $1.5 billion in development aid to ASEAN, you know, and buy an additional $150 billion worth of agricultural products from ASEAN over the next 5 years. You know, so those numbers, you know, the Washington offering, you know, they're unilateral pledges, but it pales in comparison to I think, what China has offered to the region. And, you know, China really has worked quite hard to, you know, deepen its economic ties. You know, two-way trade in goods, for example, came up to something like $878 billion last year. You know, it's more than double the US's trade with ASEAN. And, you know, you just have to contrast how these numbers have grown over the years. In the year 2000, total US trade with ASEAN was $135 billion, and China's trade stood only at $40 billion. And not only that, you know, I think China, you know, through its Belt and Road Initiative, is helping to build infrastructure like railways and ports in a number of ASEAN countries. It's also part of the ASEAN-led RCEP trade pact. And this is unlike the US, which pulled out from the TPP in 2017. American engagement in the region is primarily, you know, focused on security, but I think China's focus is on trade and infrastructure, two things that are very important to a fast-developing region like Southeast Asia.
This podcast is available on our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Like us and rate us. And now, back to our podcast episode.
Yeah, one thing that was a bit of an elephant in the room during the summit was the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework, or the IPEF, which is America's soon-to-be-released strategy for economic engagement in the region. And, you know, it's not out yet, but it'll probably be out soon this month. So when it comes to trade and economics, like you said, America is at a bit of a disadvantage. You know, it withdrew from the TPP in 2017, and in contrast, China is now in the RCEP. And, you know, the IPEF, this latest in the alphabet soup of trade stuff in the region, you know, that hasn't come out yet. But as far as we can tell, it's not going to be a traditional trade deal. You know, it's not going to have market access. It's not going to have, you know, things like that. Instead, we will have pillars. And this is expected to address supply chain resilience, infrastructure and climate solutions, anti-corruption, and fair, resilient trade. And this will include a fair bit of, you know, digital economy related issues.
But, you know, that's not quite what Southeast Asia wants, is it?
Yeah, not quite. And you can really tell this from the comments that the leaders made on the sidelines of the summit. You know, even the countries that were broadly supportive of the IPEF, which was discussed at the summit. So, you know, for one, Singapore's Prime Minister Lee Hsien Loong, he said that US participation in the Asia Pacific must also consist of economic cooperation and not just security and defense. And, you know, he was talking about the IPEF, and he said that in terms of investment and trade, there isn't much substance yet. But he did say that it does represent a new start after, you know, America's withdrawal from the TPP. And he acknowledged that, you know, while the US isn't ready to participate in trade or investment cooperation yet, hopefully the IPEF can be a jumping off point to, you know, work towards fully restoring economic cooperation. And, you know, somewhat echoing the sentiment was Malaysia's Prime Minister Ismail Sabri Yaakob, who called for the US to adopt a more active trade and investment agenda. But honestly, it's not like the ASEAN leaders have much choice. You know, this is as much as the US is willing and able to give at the moment. So they're also acknowledging these US limitations.
I guess the one thing going for the US is that, you know, there's also a great deal of ambivalence towards China in the region. There was this survey by the ICES Yusof Ishak Institute earlier this year that, you know, of the region's, you know, policymakers, academics, and business people, you know, it showed that, you know, 2/3 of respondents were worried about China's growing economic influence. You know, China is seen by far as the most influential political and economic power in Southeast Asia. And so, you know, there's this sense of wariness. You know, and to be fair, you know, some of this is China's fault. You know, you just have to look at some of the actions that it's taken in militarizing parts of the South China Sea. You know, it has disputes with a number of Southeast Asian countries.
Right, yeah, it's not in the interest of ASEAN member states to become overly dependent on China, and, you know, they know this.
Yeah, and so, you know, keeping the US engaged in the region economically, I think basically gives ASEAN more options, you know, more flexibility. So any engagement, like you said, from the US is going to be welcomed. But, you know, as we discussed earlier, it's still going to be a very, very big gap for the US to try and close.
Thank you, Danson. That nicely wraps up our chat. You've been listening to PowerPlay. I'm Carissa Yong.
And I'm Danson Cheong. Do check out our bylines in the Straits Times online. We also have links in the podcast text description below.
The Asian Insider Podcast channel is also available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Like us and rate us.